Remember Steven Spielberg's Taken, the sci-fi epic miniseries event? It's pretty well done, I thought. Pretty well done indeed. Yvonne Smith, our guest, will be back with her in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, Yvonne Smith, our very special guest tonight. Yvonne, tell us about your hypnotherapy sessions. How do they work? How do you set it up?
You know, and I wanted to mention real quick, George, since you had asked about the book, I wanted the listeners to know that that my website's taking advanced sales for the book. So they just can go to ysmith.com and you know, go do that, and then it'll come out after the first of the year. With hypnotherapy, this is a very important tool to use for people who have suffered a trauma, for instance. And what happens is our subconscious mind, which is stronger than our conscious mind, will protect us, and it'll only allow the things that it feels that we can handle. People come to me, they don't have a completely blank mind. They have memory. They have some memory.
Are they afraid?
Are they? Oh, yes, yes.
You do sense that on them?
Oh, yes. They know that something happened to them, but they can't quite, you know, pinpoint it. They don't know. They don't know what. All they know is that they've, say, woken up with a strange mark on their body, or they've woken up feeling. So many times they've said, "I feel like I was run over by a truck." Very, very tired, very achy, flu-like symptoms. They're unable to sleep, as I mentioned before. Many people who have had this experience just dread the night. Many of them take nighttime jobs so that they don't have to deal with trying to sleep at night. So there is fear there in the very beginning. And those people that feel that they've had encounters and they've been very, very positive, of course, I don't see those people because they, you know, they don't need help like what I could help them with. So the people that come to me, they're at that point where they want to know. They want to know if they're crazy, and some of them are hoping that they are, because that way they tell me, at least I could get hospitalized or I could take medication and it'll be over. But I sit there and I tell them, well, the fact that you think that you're crazy and telling me that you think you're crazy, you're not crazy, because the people that are walking around, you know, with no clue. I've worked with, oh, my gosh, in my clientele, just about the cross section of any community. I've had police officers and doctors and lawyers and housewives and construction workers, other therapists. So it just there really is not a clear similarity as far as, you know, why they choose certain people.
How do you put them under, so to speak?
It's basically just I first, when they come to me, and in my training, I put them through a suggestibility test. I have them perform certain tasks, getting used to my voice, taking direction, making them feel, you know, that they are safe. And to see, you know, how suggestible they are to me, to my suggestions to them. Once that is done, that's usually just done during the first session, and then I have them lie on the couch, and because I think it's a little bit more comfortable than sitting in a chair. And I begin the process of relaxing every part of their body. It's called progressive relaxation technique. And it's just basically having them get used to my voice. is developing the rapport with someone.
And now, don't knock us out over the air here.
Don't worry, I'll count everybody out before before we leave, George. No, this is funny. It's funny you mentioned that. When I've done several television shows, and the crew has come into my home and, you know, just set up my home like a studio.
Yeah.
I have had, and I'm not kidding about this, night when I've done some hypnosis regressions on the air, on tape, I have had to, once I brought my subject out, I've had to turn around and count the cameraman out and the sound man out, because they said, oh, my God, we're getting so relaxed, you know. So that does happen. I didn't want them walking out of my house, you know, in hypnosis. But
well, don't do that to me. My head will hit the microphone, and you'll know I've gone down
here. I'll count you out, George. But it's just a very safe. It's a safe tool to use. However, hypnosis and hypnotic regression can be misused if someone is not properly trained. And in this work with abduction cases, you have to be very careful how you pose the questions, and be careful not to lead them. Now we've come under fire also with these debunkers saying that those of us working with hypnosis will lead the subject into,
or you plant it in their head, right?
I mean, and you know, you can ask any one of my clients, I mean, they'll tell you, gosh, Yvonne hardly says anything. You know, I let them process what they're experiencing, and then, you know, then I'll ask them a question. But, you know, if you, a person who's not trained, and I've heard horror stories that, you know, okay, now you're going up into this bright light. You're being lifted in this bright light, and now you're being put on the table. I mean, you have to be so, so careful with this, because this is very serious. We're dealing with a very serious issue.
Well, now let's then lead us into the Close Encounter Resource Organization.
Wonderful.
Exactly, what is that?
It is a support group that I founded about 15 years ago or so, and it was because when people came in to see me and I worked with these people in private sessions, I realized as they were coming and talking to me, I was the only person that they were able to talk to. They were afraid to talk, to bring this up with their own spouse. They certainly couldn't talk about it at work for fear of losing their jobs. So I began with a core group of members and, you know, explained, this is what I want to do, and we came up with the name CERO, and, you know, acronym for Close Encounter Resource Organization. Over the years, we have come under national and international attention because, you know, people couldn't believe that there was an actual support group. The public didn't realize it was, this problem was so widespread that we needed a support group. And I was on a show a few years ago in New York. It was, I believe, the Rolanda show. And she couldn't believe. She goes, my gosh, there's a support group for this. And I said, you know, it's like anything else over the years. You know, years ago, we didn't want to believe that parents, you know, abuse their own children. I mean, it's still a horror when I think about it. But now there's, you know, there's help. There's therapists. There's groups. You know, even for rape victims. I mean, people that have suffered, you know, trauma. Well, this is the same thing. If you walked in, George, to my support group meeting, and we hold them every month, and you didn't know that it was an abduction support group, I mean, these people are wonderful people. You'd have such a good time. They laugh together. We have a potluck, you know, and then we sit and talk. But, you know, it's just that we're dealing with this taboo subject, and here we are in 2007 and it's still taboo.
Have you ever had anybody break down and cry or really show emotion?
All the time. All the time. And I'm talking about, you know, even, you know, how men, I guess, you know, they're, you know, I guess society says, you know, they're not supposed to cry because that shows weakness, which is you know, ridiculous, but I've had male clients who have owned their own companies, always been in control, break down on my couch and cry like a child because I've regressed them back to childhood many times, and they're reliving the experience. And it really is heartbreaking. I mean, I've had to really block myself from crying myself because I feel like, you know, I'm not going to do them any good if I break down, you know. But it really is heart-wrenching when, and I have many of these sessions on tape, on videotape, and I have them all on audio tape. And because when you bring someone back to a particular time and place where they experience something that, you know, traumatic and frightening, they will show emotion. I mean, it surprises them. And the men that, you know, I bring them out of hypnosis, and they were just so, they couldn't believe that they cried and they showed that much emotion. They said, I wasn't expecting that. So it just, you know, and I think this is what keeps me in this work too, George, is because there really is no help. I mean, those of us that do this are very few and far between.
Well, that is true too. Okay, now give us, if you can, a few case history cases, and kind of take us through the entire procedure, what they see, what's happening to them, and do it on a case, Yvonne, that I think you have found pretty compelling.
Well, I've had, I've had a couple cases that I have in my book. There's two of them, of double abductions. One of them is a case of two brothers from Knoxville, Tennessee. And I think this case really put it on the map for me because I worked with the one brother, and I can say their name because they've given me permission. It's in the book.
Okay. First names are fine. Just first names.
Jesse. And I worked with him for many years. He was in the film industry out here. And he talked to me about an incident that he remembered back in 1957 in Rogersville, Tennessee, where he and his brother were playing in the backyard in their sandbox. And he remembered there was a slight hill in the back of the backyard. And he remembered a man standing up at the top of this hill. And he said, for some reason, I grabbed my brother John's hand, and we walked up the hill, and it looked like this man had an axe in his hand. He was raising it as if he were going to throw it at these children, which doesn't make any sense. And that's where his memory stopped, conscious memory stopped. And when we did a regression, a couple of regressions on this, he described on the top of this hill this house, round house that was being built. And, of course, he was taken in, given a, you know, examination, an alien-type medical examination, which maybe a lot of the listeners have been familiar with. But after about 30 some odd years, his brother John called.
Now, 30 years?
After 30 some odd years, and this is not unusual, George. This is not unusual. Jesse at the time lived out here, Burbank, California, and John called from Knoxville, Tennessee, where he lived with his family, wife and family, and just said, you know, I've been thinking about that day too, because the brothers would talk, but Jesse never told them any type of you know, detail, because he knew that he wanted to find out if this was real, and he didn't want his brother to know anything about his, you know, what he was doing in regression. And so you know, John said, I want to find out if, you know, if there was something that happened. We flew out, Jesse and I flew out to Knoxville, And I was, you know, I stayed in their parents' spare room. The whole Long family, Jesse and John's family, are just wonderful people. And I did a couple of regressions with John. But before I did, George, I had so many, I presented this at one of the MUFON International conferences I spoke in Austin, Texas, because I couldn't believe what I was experiencing myself. But there was a threat of rain that day I was going to do his first regression, and John said, you know, if you want to see my house, we better go out there, because if it rains, it's going to be hard to get out there, because it's out there in the middle of nowhere. It was in Raccoon Valley, Tennessee. He was building a round house. He just always wanted to live in a round house, and he's very, very talented with his hands, and he was building it himself. He did not hire a general contractor and crew. And you know, Jesse didn't tell me too much about, you know, what he was doing, but we took a trip out, and I took video and stills of this house. And I asked John, well, you know, why did you want to build this? He goes, I don't know. I was just compelled to. But he started building this house, and he got the idea of building this house 10 years prior to Jesse looking into his, you know, the part of his case.
Sure.
And when I was out there, after getting the tour of the house, and it was not done yet, he also said, I forgot to show you, or Jesse said, we have to show you something. And this is what really, I think it shocked me, because John did not read anything about UFOs. He didn't care about, you know, UFOs. He just wanted to, you know, build his house for his family. But he brought out a 6-foot replica built to scale of a praying mantis. Now, I don't know if you know the significance of the praying mantis in this work, but a lot of people describe seeing one of the alien beings on board as being very, very tall, very spindly, and looking very insect-like, and they many times describe it as a praying mantis. And so I was very taken back, and I couldn't say anything about the research, because John had not had his first regression yet, and I didn't want to taint, you know, him and the case. So he had no idea of the significance, but we did his first regression, and he had the same conscious memory as Jesse. I had this all on tape as well, and the transcripts, that he was talking about playing in the backyard, but he kept going back to when I would ask him a question, and tell me the next thing that happens. He said he saw the band, but then he kept referring back to seeing this bullfrog and talking about the bullfrog, and I thought, okay, somehow this is telling me that his subconscious is blocking. He's not ready to, you know, to walk up that hill yet. But after going back and then taking them back and questioning him again, and where are you and what are you and Jesse doing, then he said, we started walking up the hill, and when they got up there, he started describing a round house that was being built. And, of course, you know, eventually the round house became the craft.
Of course, a flying saucer. Stay with us. We'll be back in a moment with you. Yvonne Smith on Coast to Coast AM. Fascinating. Well, next hour, we're going to open up the phone lines. Yvonne Smith, our guest. If you think you've been abducted, definitely call in. Back with her in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back, Yvonne Smith, our guest. Yvonne, all right, let's talk a little bit about where we picked up. Yvonne, you were talking about how they looked at a house, but it was really a flying saucer.
Yeah,
the craft.
In this case, I mean, I'm going to try to, you know, wrap this up. I know that there's so much detail in all these cases, George. It's just so hard to try to explain them, but of course, they were both taken, you know, ultimately they were both taken into the craft. and the brothers were separated. Both went through examinations. Both of the brothers came back with an object in their bodies. Jesse had an object in his left shin, and John has an object still in his left ear, right under the skin. Around, you could feel it. It's a round object. At one point, I was setting up an appointment with him with a doctor in Franklin, Tennessee, to have it x-rayed and possibly removed. And when we were getting ready to make the appointment and so forth, John decided that he did not want to have it removed. And I asked him why, and he said it's part of the agreement. And he came away from that experience feeling that he allowed them to put this object in his ear, mm-hmm. and we feel, okay, if, you know, a tracking device, possibly. And that's in the transcript, you know, he'll say, so we know where you are, and this is not the first time I've heard this. And but what's really interesting about John is that he has a high school education, and he is, has built this house. It's already done. He has also very recently, and this was after his regressions, has come up with some amazing inventions, and where he has some patents that are pending. I go into more detail, and I'll have, you know, the information in the book. It'll be I'll have the all of his inventions in there and the patents and so forth. But when I went to visit the brothers, well, Chris, do you remember the Encounter show a few years ago?
Oh, yeah, sure.
We did a segment. They called me. They wanted to do a segment about the brothers. The show flew me back to Tennessee. I did another regression, and it was all on film, of course. And they put this wonderful segment together about these two brothers. I mean, we did a lot of work on it, and I was, you know, very proud of the segment. Because I think this was an important one, because it shows people out there that this doesn't just happen to individuals, but it'll happen to, you know, groups of people. I have another case of a mass abduction that, you know, I might be able to talk about, but here this person, John, who is, you know, he inventing these things, that this one invention that he has, and I have permission to talk about it, it has to do with magnets. And when I went to see the brothers last summer, I visited them to get an update. John gave me the information about his patent, his inventions. He said this one that had to do with magnets, he wasn't able, they put a hold on the patent. The government was very interested in where he got this information and who he talked to, and they told him they may be putting an order of secrecy on it, and they would be able to take it. And that struck me as, you know, very, very odd. And he said, here I am with a high school education, and the government wants to put an order of secrecy on one of my inventions.
That's a great story.
Oh, it's unbelievable, George. I mean, these are the, you know, just one of the cases that I have when I came home from regressing John the first time, I just put it on the map for me. I knew that this is all was real. And I was already eyeball deep in, you know, in my cases and in the research. And, you know, I just, I feel that, no, I can't walk away from it. I have, there's another case that'll be in the book. There's two double abduction cases in there. And like I said, I've included the transcripts because I want people to read how detailed these people get when they're regressed back and they relive what happened to them, and the similarities of, you know, it was a double abduction of two women, and the similarities of what they remembered consciously and what they remembered in hypnosis, seeing each other on the craft. You know, it has to do with body marks, and it's another very involved case. I have a case that I could touch on it. It's going to be the subject of my next book, but it's, do you remember years ago, George, an organization called the Triad? They put on Triad conferences. It was sponsored by the Bigelow Foundation at one time. I don't know if you recall.
No, I don't.
Okay, well, I did. Well, it was a group of us. It was myself, Bud, David Jacobs, John Carpenter, and John Mack. And we all traveled together and did several of these conferences for Triad. And they were wonderful. We went all over the United States. This one conference, they asked me to MC. It was back in March of 1994. And it was in San Diego, California. And it was being held at the very famous Del Coronado Hotel. Now, that hotel has history. Do you remember the film Some Like It Hot was filmed there?
Yes.
And, of course, it's supposed to be haunted. So we went down there. I was accompanied by 12 of my CIRL members, and by the time this weekend was done, the conference was all done. 8 out of the 12 CIRL members had an abduction experience, and if that weren't enough, and I'm still putting all the transcripts and more details and interviewing all of the CIRL members because I want to be detailed and get the information correct for the book. But President Clinton was also staying at the Del Coronado at the same time. So you can imagine, here we were, UFO researchers, and I had my big name tag, you know, Triad conference, you know, MC UFO conference, and here we had all these Secret Service just, you know, walking around the hotel with their earpieces on, and you know that they were aware of us.
Sure.
You know, but I thought that was the most interesting weekend. But I have, you know, that's another, like I said, case that I'm putting together with, and these are, you know, 8 people out of the 12. That, you know, experience something all at the same time. So these things happen in groups, and but I have so many other cases, and it's difficult, like I said, to go into detail. But if, you know, whatever questions anybody has, of course, I'd be more than happy to answer them.
Okay, and we're going to do that next hour. We'll get into the questions and maybe even share some stories. Maybe you'll get some more individuals for your next work. You never know.
Oh gosh, George, just like we said, it's so widespread. I'm getting emails from all over the country that people that need help, and it's because they found out I was going to do your show.
How has this alien abduction phenomenon affected people's lives? Has it destroyed people?
Well, I'll tell you, it does. It does affect them when they're working. You know, trying to talk about this with their coworkers is very difficult. Many of them need to keep it a secret. I mean, I have people that are, you know, I work with airline pilots, and you know, many professional people that they feel their careers would be destroyed. Now, I think that is so wrong that people have to keep this under wraps. Relationships, it affects relationships, marriages break up because, you know, one spouse might feel threatened. You know, boy, if this is happening to you, it could be happening to me. And it does happen in couples. I've worked with many couples that are living together, married. It just, people lose friends because it's just too much for someone to, you know, to digest. I mean, none of us really grew up with aliens in our lives. So when something came into their room, they tried to describe it as best they could, but nobody said, oh, there was a little gray alien in my room, you know.
Hardly anybody believes them, right?
Well, there, I think the majority of people do not, and that's unfortunate. And just as a researcher and, you know, director of CIRO, I get, you know, questioned, and I know, you know, people roll their eyes like, you know, what is she doing? But it doesn't, you know, it doesn't matter, George, because I know this is real. These people are experiencing something very real, very physical. And once they get past, you know, the fear, and once they know that there, this might be another book, Life After Abduction, you know, once they know there's life after abduction and there's other people, many other people that they can talk to and relate to, as I mentioned before, that's where I have seen the healing. They get on with their lives. I had this one client, one CIRO member, that she said she was in such a depression, she would just lock herself in her room.
Jeez.
And after
that's
going
sad.
Through, very sad, and going through regressions and processing all this for a few years, she said, and this was very telling to me, she said, you know, I don't care if there are aliens or there are no aliens or UFOs. She goes, I could care less about them. She says, all I know is that I feel better, I feel stronger, and you saved my life. And this is exactly what she told me. And that was very telling to me. She just felt healed.
Let's talk a little bit more about this praying mantis.
Oh.
Because this, to me, is the epitome of a scary-looking alien.
Oh, sure. There are many different types of aliens that are described on board, many times working together. And I get this description of a praying mantis type very often. They're, like I said, very tall, very spindly, usually they seem to be a little bit more in charge. Like the little worker guys bring them in, and then the taller alien being. And right. It's not always the praying mantis, though. It's the taller being that look like the little grays. But, you know, there is definitely a chain of command when you're on board. I mean, it may sound funny to people, but there is a chain of command. But if you take a look at the face of a real praying mantis, I mean, they are unusual looking. With those eyes, and that's what people describe mainly from these beings are the eyes.
Do you remember the movie Close Encounters of the Third Kind?
Oh, yes.
In that last scene.
Yes.
That was a praying mantis that was coming down.
It was that.
And then the little grays took over, the
yes,
little ones.
Yes, wasn't that interesting?
Yep. Not a lot of people bring that up, Yvonne, because they don't even think about it.
Right.
But that was a praying mantis alien that walked out of that ship.
Well, it's really funny, George, because I was working with this child at the time. They were in my home with the mother, and I had, for some reason, I don't know if it was movie was on or it was a clip of it that had come on, and I knew these people very well. And a little boy was probably about 8 years old, and he came and sat next to me, and he kind of got close to me. He said, "That's what I saw in my room." And
gee.
Yeah, and you know, just I start getting children at about probably the age of four or five years old, talking about this.
That's amazing.
And you know, and well, the parents will then deal with their experiences when they start hearing their children talk about something strange like this, and then they're going, oh, no. You know, they had put it on the back burner. They didn't want to think about it. They didn't want to deal with it. But now, I mean, I have so many parents saying, I have to deal with it because I have to help my child. and it's, you know, it, working with the children, it's sad in a way, but they're so pure and so, you know, they're so not afraid of anything. But sometimes they are frightened because, and I have, you know, I have a case of a little girl that remembered something, somebody putting, she called it her dream knife in her belly button.
Oh.
Bud was staying at my home because we were doing a conference. This was a few years ago. And it was my neighbor, and we walked across the street, and he helped me interview the mother. And the little girl had these blisters. They look like water blisters all over her abdomen. And they look like, oh, my God, it's got to be so painful. When she lifted her little top, I thought, oh, my gosh, she's got to be in so much pain. And she wasn't.
Right.
And the mother took her to the family doctor. The family doctor called in two dermatologists. They didn't know what it was. And they couldn't explain it at all. And so when, you know, the mother said, well, I just kind of sat there with five doctors, and I said, well, maybe she was abducted by aliens. And they all kind of, like, chuckled, you know. But it was the whole family. The whole family had experiences on the mother's side.
I guess if you've been abducted, you don't chuckle, do you?
Well, you know what? Afterwards, you do. I mean, you should see my serial members in the group. I mean, they laugh at themselves. You know, they laugh with themselves. They laugh at themselves. They can joke. I mean, there are serious times, too. But to go through the process of being, you know, starting out with fear, and of course, you can't blame them. My God, I mean, what they're put through. And then they're not told why they're being manipulated. And then they go through the anger. It's like going through the stages of loss. You go through all those stages of anger and, you know, denial. And they have, you know, I tell them you have a right to be angry. And then they go through the process of, okay, I want to know what this is. And they start getting those messages about, as Jim Sparks did, you know, mm-hmm. Later on, he started, you know, I want to know what this is. I want to know, you know, why they're doing this and what they're telling me. And here he was in a school-like, classroom-like setting, and he was being taught their alphabet. I have cases like that, too. It's almost like once they pass that fear, then they start, I guess you can call it learning. What's being told to them.
You know our friend Paula Harris.
Oh, yes. My friend, my dear friend and colleague, I respect Paula.
She's very, very efficient at what she does. Well, Yvonne, stay with us. We're going to open up the phone lines next to give people an opportunity to chat with you. And if you think you've been abducted and you want to talk with her about it, please call. I'm George Norrie, back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM.